thing we have to fear is fear itself. Fear itself. Fear itself.
From the Center for History and New Media at George Mason University, this is Digital Campus, a biweekly discussion of how digital media and technology are affecting learning, teaching, and scholarship at colleges, universities, libraries, and museums.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Fear itself.
This is Digital Campus, episode 102. Recorded Thursday, December 12th, 2013. Digital Campus on 2013 and the uncertain future of Amazon's drones.
It is our favorite time of the year for the holiday predictions episode and year-end roundup of the Digital Campus podcast. Welcome, everyone. I'm Dan Cohen, calling to you from very chilly Boston, Massachusetts, where it was 9 this morning. And I'm hoping some folks of my south are a little warmer. Let's see who's out there from the Roy Rosenzweig Center for History and New Media, Stephen Robertson. Are you there? Hello.
I am here, and it is a little bit warmer, though for me, still quite cold.
Great. And Sharon Leon. Hey, Sharon.
Hi there. I'm at the other end of the hall from Stephen, and it is freezing in my office.
Always had that problem with the leveling of temperature at the center. Always tough. It's the same here at Boston Public Library. I've been freezing, and now I'm really hot in our conference room. Amanda French, I think, is also talking to us from Fairfax, Virginia.
I am.
Hello, Amanda. And let's see, Mills Kelly, also on campus somewhere.
Yes, I'm over in Robinson Hall, where the temperature is a balmy 64 in my office. I can assume that's part of our sustainability initiative here.
That's right. And it also helps with grading, doesn't it? I think there's been some studies on that.
I think so, yeah. I'm not sure whether it helps me or the students, but it definitely helps.
And rounding out our contingent is my New England buddy in Connecticut, Tom Scheinfeld. Hey, Tom.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, it's very cold here. I'm in Middletown, Connecticut today, visiting our friends at Connecticut Humanities. And actually, they are doing some great things here. So if the audience out there wants to follow them on Twitter, they are CT Humanities, at CT Humanities. Good people.
Great. Terrific. All right. Well, for those who have been with us for many years, you know that this is, I think, our most fun podcast, where we go around, give our cheer for the year to some event, some entity who's done something great this year that we really want to applaud. We also have our jeers section, which I think is really the most fun, where we get to be at our most abusive on this podcast to criticize those who have done wrong and give them a podcast lump of coal. And we also return to our predictions from last year, where we have a decent but not shiny clean record. We'll see how we do as we look back at our predictions from a year ago for 2013. And then we'll end the podcast with our predictions for 2014, which will all come true. So you should stay tuned until the very end. Mills, why don't I start off with you with your, well, let's see, should we do jeers first? No, let's do cheers. Let's start with some holiday cheer. Mills, your cheer.
Start on a positive note.
On a positive note. That's right. Yes.
You know, my cheer, I think I'm probably going to steal from several other people, but that's the way it goes because I get to go first. And that is, I got to cheer Judge Chin for an incredibly clearly worded decision in the Google Books case. And, you know, it's such a complicated issue. And what I appreciated about it is about the wording of the opinion is that he was able to elucidate these complicated issues in ways that not only made sense to the lawyers involved, but I think are going to make sense to students taking a look at this 10 years and 20 years from now. So my cheer is for Judge Chin.
Can we get an actual cheer? Like a hip hip hurrah?
Hip hip hooray!
Because y'all are lame.
Cheer. We just got some stadium noise there. So that was great, whoever edited that in. Tom, who or what have you given your cheer for 2013 to?
I'm going to give my cheer to what I'm going to call the new investors in digital humanities. I think 2013 saw the launch of several new initiatives on campuses that we maybe haven't heard much from in the past, but who are investing heavily in digital humanities initiatives. So I'm thinking here especially of Northeastern University with its new lab and a couple of great faculty hires there, Arizona State University, a couple of great faculty hires there, and several others around the country. It seems like there's it's I don't know whether it's the second or the third wave of digital humanities centers and investments being made, but it seemed like 2013 saw the launch of lots of new initiatives, and I was very pleased to see that.
Great. Thanks, Tom. Sharon, why don't we hop over to you?
All right. So, cheers. Well, I think I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction than the first two and suggest this is the year that we should be thankful for the proliferation of collections and platforms with easily understood and functioning APIs. I think that that with DPLA and some of the other platforms, Chronicling America, we're almost at the point where we can start to really mush some very interesting digital humanities collections and materials together in new and productive ways.
Boy, that's a great choice, and not just because you mentioned DPLA, but it is true. I have felt this year as well that things have gotten easier. And I remember talking at the center a decade ago about how hard, you know, just really basic things are to do. And I think Omeka has been a part of that. If we can pat each other on the back here.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, well, no, I just think, but between a lot of tools, I think that's
I'd agree with that. I mean, you know, I'm thinking back to 1 week, one tool and the great group mm-hmm. we had at the center this summer.
Absolutely. That's a great illustration.
How far they were able to get in 1 week with Serendipomatic, I think is, you know, it's a testament to their, you know, amazing energy and talent, but it's also a testament to the resources that are available now and the APIs. So that's a great one, Sharon. Thank you.
Terrific. Amanda, how about over to you?
So my cheer is for JSTOR's release of all the documents and emails about the very tragic Aaron Swartz matter. When in July, MIT released its report, I read that cover to cover. There were one or two people who called it a whitewash. I didn't feel that it was a whitewash. I felt that the MIT report was, you know, really thorough and quite fair in its assessment of what had happened. And it did make some recommendations about what MIT should do and where they had failed in sort of dealing with the whole thing. So, you know, maybe sort of a half a cheer for the MIT report. But I thought that JSTOR did a really exemplary job of putting up sort of all of the related documents that they had. They did a great, you know, they put on their website a chronology of events. They posted redacted PDFs of, you know, a lot of emails related to the matter. I spent a lot of time going through those too. You know, it was obviously an issue that a lot of people were very interested in. And, you know, whatever you think of the MIT report, I think it would be hard to ask for any better transparency from JSTOR in what was a really difficult time, I'm sure, for them and for Aaron Swartz and his friends and family. So that's my cheer.
All right. Good choice, Amanda. Thanks. Stephen, what do you have for this year? This is your first time doing this. I hope the pressure's not too much on you, but
I'm really cracking, particularly since you're taking my cheers out from underneath me. I think it is worth at least doubling in passing the cheers to Judge Chen, because that's the decision that's going to people are going to remember from this year. And I think what Mill said about it is what's so valuable. It's the clarity of what he said, the way that he marked the terrain out there for digital humanities in terms of what can be done with Google Books, which I think is going to be something that will carry over into next year. If I've got to find some independent ground. I guess my cheer would go out to what I spent a bit of time talking about in the last podcast, which is the Smithsonian's 3D collection. I think we're beginning to wander around a moment where we might see more 3D as part of a kind of move to some more maker orientation in what's going on. 3D printers are coming down in price. The vision that the Smithsonian had of, you know, of somehow projecting its collections via 3D printers into classrooms, I think is the kind of push we need perhaps to bring that kind of maker orientation to the forefront again. So as well as a passing cheer for Judge Chen, that my cheer would be for the Smithsonian and a push to that kind of maker material orientation, which has been there for a while, but maybe is going to be a little bit more prominent going forward.
Great. Yeah, you know, here at Boston Public Library, they are in the middle of redoing the Central Library for Boston and are in fact thinking about opening up some space that would just be kind of freeform lab space with, you know, some 3D printers, but also some other things, some large walls with projectors, and just, you know, adding a little bit more interactivity and creativity in the cultural heritage and library area. So it's a great point. Well, certainly I give a hearty slap on the back to Judge Chen. I thought the language was great. I'm going to just underline that as well as my honorable runner-up. But I'd like to just give an end-of-the-year thanks to all the employees of the federal government, many of whom have supported all of our work and really stuck it out and were so patient and generous during a shutdown this fall, and then are still, from what I gather, recovering from having to make up ground from that weeks of the shutdown. And they are important to digital humanities, and in the case of the Institute of Museum and Library Services, to what's going on, and obviously in libraries and museums. So thanks to them. They get a big cheer from me, and I'm sure from others on the podcast. All right, let's move to jeers. Yes, we'll cut in some more crowd cheering noise, this time from a punk rock concert from 1977 for Brett Motley. Brett, long-time listener, long-time lurker. Okay, let's move on to jeers. Well, maybe I should reverse order here slightly.
It's so only fair.
Steven does not get his thunder stolen. Steven, who would you like to, let's say, give some words of advice to this year?
Well, I mean, in some ways, that's a perfect segue, because I think the biggest jeer's got to go out to Congress for shutting down the federal government, for continuing the budget madness. I mean, as we go to air, there are vague signs that the craziness that is the sequester might come to an end, and that would hopefully again help out a lot of our friends in the federal government and stop the kind of strangling of the federal funds that help all of us in our work. But a shutdown that went as far as shutting down the online presence of whole ranges of the federal government, creating havoc with the work of a lot of people who are already doing far more than they're really being paid for, has got to be the biggest year. So, and again, you know, maybe I'm the right person to say that as the foreigner arriving, that Congress is without doubt the needs the largest dose of crowd noise that we can come up with.
Yes, again, we're going to have to get... You stole my jeer, or one of my big jeers. So double jeer from me. But yeah, we're going to have to get some jeering crowd noise.
Didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!
Well, while you're lighting up the mic with your jeer, Amanda, would you like to amend your entry or talk about anything else?
Sure, I will spare a jeer for a really recent story that I don't think we've covered on the podcast yet, but just in the last week or two, we've learned that Elsevier...
Oh, don't take mine.
I'm taking it. Elsevier has been sending takedown notices to people posting their own papers on academia.edu. I saw a brief headline today, too, that says, oh, and now they're sending takedowns to people who are posting them on their website, which, of course... Elsevier is well within its legal rights to do if a scholarly author of a research paper has assigned her or his copyrights over to Elsevier and has not reserved to him or herself the right to post the paper he or she wrote
somewhere, such as academia.edu or as on their own website. So Elsevier is entirely, you know, legally within its rights to do that. But come on, Tell him.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!
Yeah, one thing about this story that I've wondered is, you know, Elsevier recently bought Mendeley, and Mendeley's, you know, killer feature is the sharing of PDFs. And, you know, my question is how, you know, it sort of seems like one, you know, one hand isn't talking to the other. I don't know how they can reconcile, you know, these takedown notices for PDF sharing with their recent acquisition, which is organized entirely around sharing PDFs, not just their own, also of from other publishers. So they may be boxing themselves into a legal problem here.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, Tom. That's right. There's probably a lot of private sharing there as well, which is tricky. Hmm. Okay, let's move over to Sharon.
Well, again, I'm going to go a little bit... Well, I don't know how non-traditional this is, but I would like to shake my fist at the university administrators around the country who seem to have gotten an inflamed case of Taylorism from their brush with MOOCs. I'm really tired of hearing administrators talk about teaching and learning and students as if they are input and output widgets, that our job is to push as many people through a classroom from one end to the other without really focusing on what it is we are doing as educators and what they are doing as learners.
Okay. I heartily agree. So, and very eloquently put about the Taylorism part of it. Okay. Let's move over to Tom.
I've got nothing.
You had something. It left.
I had Congress. I had Elsevier. All the usual women boys. I'm going to have to pass. Maybe I'll think of something before the end of the Jeers section.
Okay. Mills, what do you have for us?
Well, first I want to just add on to what Sharon said. And you left out one really important group in the Jeer there, and that's university governing boards. Because sometimes it's the administrators, sometimes it's the governing boards. And, you know, this just sort of mania for mookishness. And so... leads to my jeer, and that is for our good friend Sebastian Thrun, founder of UDacity,
who
has now, after telling us how his whole MOOC idea was going to transform higher education, has come clean and said, oh, wait, actually, MOOCs kind of suck when it comes to educating students, so I'm going to just shift gears entirely and go over to corporate training. So, bye. See ya. Sebastian, it was really nice knowing you, and best of luck in the corporate training environment. I hope you find a way to compete with John Cleese, who's already got that market pretty well sewn up.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
That's right. Gosh. Yes. Well, that was pretty
City.
Incredible. Yeah, UDacity. We haven't said that in a while. I feel like it deserves a comeback with that interview that Sebastian had.
I had a friend who used to work for Trump University, and she, you know, I was like, Trump University, what is this? And it was an executive education, you know, scam, basically. And they actually have been undergoing a lawsuit about their use of the term university, because they were not a university, and they made a lot of, like, unsubstantiated promises about how taking classes at Trump University would get you, you know, $1 million a year jobs and all of this stuff. So,
and really great haircuts.
Yeah. So even executive education is, I'm sure it is a cash cow, but you got to watch out for the lawsuits down the line.
Well, there goes my prediction for 2014, Dan University. God, it was going to be good too. All right. Well, yeah, of course, everyone's covered my jeers. I think particularly when I saw this tweet from a professor at the University of Maryland's iSchool, Jessica Vitak, who said that, in fact, posted on Twitter her takedown notice from Elsevier. I thought it was a perfect year for this year. So I will just highlight that. I'm not sure why it's taken so long. I've been sort of puzzling over the why now question, which I guess is what historians tend to do. Why has something happened this year rather than other years? Because surely academia.edu has been up for many years now, and also personal websites have been, and people have been posting these things, often connected from their CVs.
You know, I did wonder, Dan, about that a little bit too, and it led me to take another look at academia.edu, which of course I have an account on, but use. And you know, I have to admit that academia.edu is actually pretty great in a lot of ways, particularly if you're not someone, I would imagine, who can build your own website and share your own stuff on there. They really have done a lot of amazing stuff with, like, they can find your articles and say, hey, did you write this? Identify this article as yours.
Right.
So
interesting.
Academia.edu is something I was very skeptical about, but I think it is actually getting some traction. So which may be one reason why Elsevier is targeting them now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You know, I was just at this meeting earlier in the week in which this proposal from the Association of Research Libraries and others have been putting together called SHARE, which is this giant open access repository as a response to the White House's demand for public access to all federally funded research. And one of the things that they were puzzling over was how do they actually get data about what people have published and clearly identify it by the authors. And I think one of the ideas there was to look at places like academia.edu or Mendeley or Zotero or other places where people are sort of claiming their articles, because they often don't post it to their personal websites, and they often don't post it to their institutional repositories. So it's often a little hard to get this data, and I think that's an interesting perspective on that. I don't have an account there myself. I'm surprised they have 6 million academics. It's hard to believe that there are that many, but I suppose there are.
Dan, okay. Yeah. Is there any evidence from the SHARE proposal and those sorts of things that anyone is using the elusive ORCID IDs?
So that's a good question. ORCID actually has been discussing doing something like this, a sort of like claim your paper sort of thing. I mean, I think, yes, there has been some pickup, some adoption. And you're seeing the ORCID IDs flow in other areas as well, other websites. Obviously, as these things go, it's first in the sciences. But I think ORCID has a chance of really working. It's just, again, it's the problem of academics who are, you know, always going to be more interested in publishing new stuff than making sure that they're filing their stuff appropriately or tagging it with linked data. So this is always going to be a bit of a struggle, and I think any solutions in terms of automating that would be greatly appreciated by the folks at SHARE.
I noticed recently that Wikipedia has just integrated the ability to use ORCID identifiers. So there's a few, not very many at all, but there's a few Wikipedia pages about notable academics that are, I haven't, you know, tested this at all, but somehow have that ORCID identifier baked into it.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, let's move back to happier things, or maybe not so happy, depending on how our predictions went last year. So let's go and look back at Tom. You were onto something here about your prediction was digital humanities going local, that 2013. Would be the year that state and local entities will start funding projects. You mentioned at the top of the podcast a lot of new entities that are doing digital humanities, new institutions that are spinning them up. How do you feel you did this year?
I think I did pretty well. I think we're going to see this play out over time a little bit. I only looked back on this morning, so I don't have a lot of evidence to back up my claim. But my anecdotal sense is that there is more interest among state humanities councils, among regional centers. I know that, for instance, the Mid-Atlantic Regional Center for the Humanities at Rutgers has advertised a couple of different digital positions and made some good hires in the area. You know, I've had more invitations this year, just personally, from state and local entities interested in digital humanities and in especially funding organizations funding digital humanities. So I think there is some momentum. You know, ultimately, those for, you know, digital practice to catch on more broadly, those are the kinds of institutions that are going to have to start funding digital projects, whereas they, you know, their comfort zone is in things like, you know, traditional museum exhibitions, library reading programs, you know, oral history, those kinds of projects. If digital methods are going to really take root more broadly than NEH can fund, those local organizations are going to have to jump on board, and I think they are starting to do so. So, you know, I think I did okay this year.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think we give you a cheer for that, or a thumbs up. At least one thumb up for that prediction. Certainly no sad trombone on that one. All right, Mills, good. Let's see how the trombone is doing with you. You thought that some brand name universities will figure out how to award credit for MOOCs. And we'll have to charge some sort of tuition. And then others will jump on the credit awarding MOOC bandwagon. Well, let's see. By my recollection, there was this experiment at San Jose State that,
Colorado
in fact,
State.
Sebastian and Georgia.
Colorado State
and Georgia Tech, probably the biggest, right?
Right.
So
right.
I think you've got at least one thumb up here, although maybe this declined toward the end of the year. I don't know.
Yeah.
This might be a mixed grade here. I hate to grade harshly.
Yeah, if we'd done the show in maybe September, I'd be claiming a full thumb up. But
right.
It's not looking so good for the MOOCsters now. And I think certainly the bandwagon part of my prediction is in the toilet. So... and largely because of all the research about completion rates and the fact that the people who do complete MOOCs are mostly college educated already, and and the fact that essentially nobody at San Jose State actually went for the credit bearing option, and so I think the MOOC tsunami crested sometime in about September or October and has been losing water fast ever since.
Yeah.
So I'll claim half.
I hate to say it. You're so honest, and an extra prize for that, Mills. But
I'll grade my prediction C-.
Okay. Yeah, so the meeting I was at on Monday, the Coalition for Networked Information meeting, was led off by the ever-terrific Cliff Lynch, who always does these kinds of look-back and prediction kinds of keynotes at the beginning of this December meeting every year. And he sort of led off with this line about, I am not going to talk about MOOCs. And a year ago, it would be the only thing that we were going to talk about. So. Something definitely changed, and changed, I think, faster than we thought. And we've been a little bit bearish on MOOCs here on the podcast from time to time. Amanda, let's see. Your prediction was that we were going to see new digital humanities organizations and events in 2013. Smaller DH organizations and more that camp type atmospheres.
I don't know that I'd say that this was a fully failed prediction, but mostly failed, I would say. As Tom was mentioning earlier in the podcast, we definitely have seen a lot more digital humanities programs and centers and initiatives of various kinds at various institutions. You mentioned Northeastern, which is just eating everybody's lunch in a really good way, I think, in digital humanities. Down at North Carolina Chapel Hill, they started offering a graduate certificate in digital humanities. I facilitated a digital humanities workshop out at Northwestern last summer. So there's a lot, there really is a big expansion, I think, in digital humanities generally. What we don't see are the professional associations and the events with those. I mean, I will say that HathiTrust had a that camp-ish event that I think was pretty well received. So, you know, we're definitely seeing a few more, you know, digital humanities conferences. In fact, I mean, you know, you can't go a week without there being some major, you know, event happening, some major conference happening. But I still think that I tend to predict things that I want to see happen, which is probably not the best way to do predictions. But I still feel like that there's a, you know, there's a real space for, you know, some organization that is devoted specifically to people who are doing text mining, you know,
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
So where they can get together and talk to one another and learn from one another, somewhere besides the big DH conference and somewhere beside that camp, which is going to inevitably tend to be multi-topic, multi-professional, multi-skill level, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think you're thinking of something like, you know, the regional MLA meetings or something like that, where you get a little bit more granular than you get at the big meetings.
Or even just topical, really. But, you know, maybe people don't need to perform professional associations like that anymore because they can just sort of, you know, talk to each other online. I don't know.
Right. Or I would stick with this prediction, Amanda. I'm going to give you some unsolicited advice, but I think you're on to something. Maybe it's a 2014 or 2015 thing.
Yeah, I have a different prediction. I reject your advice, Dan.
All right, let's attempt at a self-criticism. Let's see. I said that half. Oh God, you know. See here, I went out on a limb because I've taken too easy a route in prior years. So this year, I went out on a limb and I said half of all books sold in 2013 would be digital, accelerated by a $99 e-reader. Well, I think I was right on that, right? What is
Well, no, you were wrong because there's a $69 e-reader.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So it's even over.
Cheap now.
Yeah, so just before the podcast, I pulled up the current stats. So the latest stats are from May 2013, so that was only halfway through the year. I'm kind of using Mill's excuse about when we're actually doing the podcast, but doing it the other way. So, but in May, it was 20% of all books sold were digital. That's up 43% over the prior year when it was 13%, but didn't really quadruple. Didn't,
you know, I think if you look at popular fiction, you'd be, you know, safe, at least safe.
Yeah. You know, we haven't really discussed like this at all. It's kind of plateaued, actually. If you look at the stats, it surged upwards, and then this year, for some reason, it's plateaued around 20%, and I really can't figure out why, because there are more and more iPads and Kindles sold, and I'm a little confused about it. I mean, I think some of it is maybe on the supply side rather than the demand side. I mean, I know, for instance, libraries have a really difficult time getting ebooks, and that might make just the format in general a little bit less acceptable to the general public, who then might go out and buy a $69 Kindle and start buying books in that way. There are some publishers that just refuse to make ebooks available or make them available so long after the hardcover's out because they make much more money on the hardcover. But I'm curious about this. I don't know if others on the podcast or in the audience have any sense of why this is, or maybe people just like paper. I'm still having trouble, I think, as I said a year ago, imagining that we get to 2020 and there's still 20% of books sold.
The Pew Research Center issued a report just the other day, just a couple of days ago, that said that I saw this from the CNI tweets, in fact, that said that 60% of all books loaded to an e-reader are never read. Wasn't that Esther Hargaday's? I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I saw that, which made me feel better.
Right, but then there was a little bit of back channel in the audience pointing out that how many people read, you know, Stephen Hawking's Brief History of Time.
Right.
This is true for print books as well, but yeah, maybe it's higher for ebooks. So, all right, well, we will plumb the depths of this strange problem or issue in 2014.
So I say your prediction was about a B-.
I think I'm down in the C range there, Mills. I hate to say it.
You got extra credit for the $65 e-reader.
Okay.
What'd I get, Mills? What's my grade?
I paid off Jeff Bezos to come out with that. That cheap e-reader.
You know, Amanda, I think you're more in the B range.
Oh no, I think it's D.
It's incomplete, surely.
Okay, this is the moment of the podcast you've all been waiting for. Please splice in the trumpets. We've set aside the sad trombone and moved to the triumphal sounds of predictions. Let's start with folks who have not predicted before. Sharon, if I can put you on the spot.
I knew you were going to start with me.
You have the stage.
And I so have, nothing this year.
I'll come back to you. You want me to come back?
Well, no. Well, so I think, I will pick this because I actually truly believe this is going to happen. 2014 is going to be the year where we see the abysmally low baseline of technical fluency of the majority of faculty, curators, and librarians come up to at least some baseline level of software as service skills, because they finally realized they need to get their acts in gear.
Okay. Skill enhancement. Yeah. All right. For 2014. Stephen, what do you think will happen next year?
Oddly, and no, perhaps not oddly, given that Sharon and I have been talking about that, I had a variation of that going on as well. Because in some ways, I do think, I wonder if this is going to be kind of the year of individual, which is related to the same thing. So if I had to leave that to Sharon, which I probably should have done in the first place, seems more and more like a cop-out as I look at what I've written down. But I guess in some ways I've been reading, as I'm sure a lot of people out there have, what Audrey Waters has been writing. And I've been really struck by her core point about the fact that in some ways what seems to be coming up for next year is exactly what was coming up for this year, that the same trends are kind of moving forward. We're not going to be talking about MOOCs, but we are going to be talking about online education. I think we are still going to be talking about makers. We're still going to be talking about a range of the political issues around higher education. I think there is a striking sense in which that, dramatic change seems to be taking a little longer than at least rhetorically we would expect. And I think as a kind of, it's the ultimate cop-out, but I'm willing to predict we'll be talking about pretty much exactly the same things in a year's time.
Okay. All right. Stasis.
Stasis.
A redo. Okay. All right. Amanda, what is your prediction? You said you had something new, so.
Well, I just remember, by the way, just commenting on Stephen's prediction. Dan, do you remember the year that I predicted that the planning committee for the DPLA would continue to plan all year?
Yes.
And I was wrong about that. That the DPLA
I do remember that
actually
yeah.
did come into being. So, it's always safe to predict stasis and inertia in academe. It's thankfully not always correct.
Well, you're saying it's not safe to predict stasis.
It is safe, yeah.
So Amanda, your prediction for 2014 is DPLA will fail.
That is not my prediction, Dan. Not at all.
Okay, hit us with your prediction.
Well, as I said, I was realizing that my past year's predictions have tended to be fairly bad, and that's partly because I tend to predict things that I want to have happen. So I decided I would predict something that I don't want to have happen. So what I think, my prediction is a very measurable one for 2014. I believe that the Affordable College Textbook Act will not pass Congress. So for those of you who have heard of this, this is a bill introduced by Al Franken and Dick Durbin in the Senate, and it's got it's sponsored by Representative Hinojosa in the House of Representatives. And it's a bill that would create a grant program through the Department of Education to fund the creation of open access, free online textbooks, which seems like a good idea, whether or not you want to do it with a bill. So I was like, yes, this would be great. Let's provide grant money to write open textbooks. But I think it's going to fail. I think it's going to pass. And interestingly enough, so I've put a widget that will track this on my own website. I went to a great website called govtrack.us, which lets you track the progress of bills and the voting records of various members of Congress and all kinds of cool stuff. And it's a very, very neat little website, and they offered a widget for your website, so I went ahead and did that. But interestingly enough, I had already decided to predict this, but when I went and looked, went to set this up for tracking, I found that govtrack.us is already predicting that this bill will fail. It gives it a 0% chance of getting out of committee in the Senate and a 1% chance of getting out of committee in the House. So it's a, I had already made the prediction before I went to govtrack.us, but I think govtrack.us.
That's almost predicting stasis.
Well, right. Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, like, and we thought Stephen's prediction was a, was a cop out.
My predictions are way better.
Okay.
You mean this Congress isn't going to pass a social welfare bill at the expense of corporate interests? This Congress? Really?
I know. So anyway.
She's planning ahead for the 2014 wrap-up. And
that's right.
Need some trumpets. Okay. Let's see. Mills, what's up?
My prediction is that somewhere in America, before the end of the year, an Amazon drone will be shot down. Likely in Texas, Idaho, or Colorado.
Wait, okay. This has to be more precise. What is the drone? What will the drone be carrying?
It'll probably be carrying an extra battery for itself because they still don't have the battery life worked out. But no, even this can't really be a prediction for 2014 because even Bezos says it's going to be 2015 before they field drone delivery service. So that's actually my prediction for 2015 is that people will start shooting them down. I used to live in Texas. Trust me, they'll start shooting them down. My actual prediction is that a number of colleges are going to close in 2014. Inside Higher Ed's been reporting on this a lot. Colleges are hard to put out of business; they really are. They have incredible staying power, but they do close. And the landscape of especially of the Northeast is littered with campuses that have closed over the last three or four decades. And while I don't expect to see, a tidal wave of college closing, I won't be surprised if somewhere between 10 and 20, especially kind of small and mid-sized liberal arts colleges, go out of business. And so my prediction is not that, but that one of the for-profit providers that has been trying to make its way in the online education landscape will make the error of taking over one of those campuses and then trying to be more like a real institution. So that's my prediction. Is a college somewhere in America, a college is going to close and some for-profit education business is going to take over that campus in the hopes of being more legit in some way.
Wow. All right. Very specific.
It's bold. It's a bold prediction. It's way more bold than stasis, let me tell you.
Yeah. And it will be staffed by drones.
No, the drones will do the grading. Just the grading.
Okay.
And it'll be staffed by my people who have newly acquired digital skills, Dan.
It could be. It could be.
All right. Gosh. Well, Mills has certainly taken up residence as our Philip K. Dick of Digital Campus Podcast. I think he's on something though. We'll see. I think there.
2015. The drones are falling. Trust me.
Drones are coming. Okay.
They're gonna fall from the sky in flames.
All right. We heard down to the last two. Tom, what do you have for the future?
So I think we've all heard. Recently President Obama exhorting everyone to learn to code. And we've seen this year a lot of the learn to code craze. We've got a host of websites, including Code Academy, code.org, Code School, et cetera, all trying to encourage everyone to learn to code. And that is pushed by big technology companies like Facebook and Google. Everybody should learn to code. That's the new craze. I'm certainly not against educating people to learn to code. But my prediction is that this kind of new learn to code craze will befall the same fate next year as the MOOC craze that befell the MOOC craze this year. Because just like the MOOC craze, this learn to code movement is more or less detached from everything we know about teaching and learning, that there are no assessment mechanisms, there are very few mechanisms for rewarding credit, they're detached from real world needs and student interests, etc. So I think that we will see an increase in the first 6 months of the year in buzz about learning to code, and then in the second 6 months of the year of 2014, some shocking revelations that these online learn to code systems and programs don't pay the dividends that their evangelists would want us to believe they do.
Okay. Great. Thank you for that prediction. I am going to leverage a prediction that sort of started to happen a little bit in the UK this year, and that I think is going to spread a bit more, which is that I think scholarly monographs have been kind of eluding this whole open access thing, and I think they're going to find it a lot harder to do in 2014, and that there may be changes afoot in that area. Wellcome Trust, for instance, now extended their open access policy in the UK to scholarly monographs and book chapters over the summer. And, in this country, we've had this OSTP mandate, this mandate to have all federally funded research. And I know that this was a year in which there was much debate about, for instance, the American Historical Association's position on access to dissertations and embargoing dissertations. But I think that there's going to be a crest of pressure to open up the books in addition to the articles. And my crystal ball is a little fuzzier than that, but fuzzy beyond that. So I can't give you drones or robots, but I think that there'll be some significant movement here, whether it's a federal mandate or specific societies or disciplines pushing more for openness in books, or funders getting into the action to fund those open books. But I think there's going to finally be movement this year in a way that there hasn't been in past years. That led silence. Yeah.
We were having to think about that one.
It sounds like a lovely idea.
Yeah, lots of forces arrayed against it, but
I know. Well, I'm trying to go for tough predictions now.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. You know, I've looking back on my history here, predictions, I've like picked the easiest ones. Like Facebook will have 1 billion members. I mean, my gosh, I got to do better than that. So I'm going with this one. I'm sticking with it. Wild card predictions?
Amanda Reagan, graduate student prediction?
I don't know. I like the open access idea. I hope it happens. I don't know. We'll see. What I'd really like to see is more requirements for digital history and digital humanities courses at universities across the country. I think the undergraduate requirement for that is hugely important. And so that's what I'd like to see. I don't know if it'll happen.
Great.
There's some side of that happening, I guess, in the sense that there's a bundle of digital history jobs out there in this year's job market. So there are some, not a lot, but a presence that wasn't there before, which suggests that there are institutions hiring people who will have it as their primary responsibility teaching some of those kinds of requirements. So there's something to ground that prediction on.
And in related news, I think this probably will also be the year that we start to see the emergence of some significant digital dissertation work. That it's time for people to begin finishing. The people that have been coming through the graduate programs, and it's time. So hopefully we'll see some of those in the next year.
Great.
See, that's not fair, Sharon, because if you're advising some graduate students who are working on digital dissertations,
well,
you can make them
finish. Of any of my own.
Okay.
So most of mine have at least 2 more years.
But the rest of you better get moving.
That's right.
You
Why
know
are you listening
wrong.
To this podcast instead of writing?
I think this podcast just entered a shame spiral. So since I'm hosting, I'm going to cut it there, because we have to wish everyone a very happy holidays from all of us at the podcast and at its home at the Roy Rosenzweig Center for History and New Media, which I miss very much. This has been quite a year of upheaval for at least some of us. So it's always great to join in the podcast and to be able to talk to our lovely audience. And we will see you all again in the new year, 2014, which will hopefully be a year of both stasis and change, but no drones. and lots of listening to this podcast.
And less shame.
As we start to complete our second 100 of these episodes. So thanks all. Have a very happy new year, and we will see you in 2014.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Fear itself. Fear itself.
Please visit us online at digitalcampus.tv. where you can join in the discussion and let us know about stories and issues you would like us to cover on future episodes. Mike O'Malley wrote our theme music.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Fear itself.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo!
Boo!